The topic for this morning's shiur is the prohibition of lifnever losite michshol, literally speaking, placing a stumbling block in front of an individual who was blind. And as the Gemara tells us in Avodah Zarah and Daf Vav, that this also extends to provoking or enabling others to sin. And therefore, even though it's something that intuitively we don't necessarily think is very common, as we'll see, there are very multiple practical applications that one always has to be aware of. You know, when we set out to characterize the mitzvos of the Torah, we can do so in various different ways. And a classic distinction that we're always used to in yeshivas and our learning is the difference between obligations ben adam lamakom, interpersonal relationships ben adam lechavero. And yet there are certain mitzvos that it's hard to characterize. Is this considered to be part of our relationship to fellow man? Is this considered to be part of our experience, our indebtedness, our relationship to Kadosh Baruch Hu? The Ramban even comments that that really is the essence of the distinction of the luchos in Aseres HaDibros. The first luach begins with obligations between ourselves and our Kadosh Baruch Hu, and the latter half is a reference to mitzvos that are ben adam lechavero. The Ramban writes that honoring parents, kibud av va'em, serves as a transition, as an elision, because there are aspects of both when it comes to our obligation to honor parents. On the one hand, what greater manifestation of simple hakara satov to honor our parents, but also, as the Gemara writes in Kedushin, shlosha shutfim ba'adam, this is a partnership. When we honor parents, that is a form of bestowing honor to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I recently gave a shir in Los Angeles. Not surprising, they asked me to speak about the topic of going green, about environmentalism. And it's something that we don't always think about. But I began with exactly this point, and that is Bal Tashchis, the need to preserve that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us. To what extent is that a societal obligation? Or to what extent is that a commitment ben Adam lamakom? You know, the Medrash tells us when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Adam HaRishon a tour of the world in Gan Eden, he told him, Teindatcha pehid shelo tachri velo tekalkel es olami. You have to preserve this world. You are not empowered to destroy it. And therefore, perhaps our responsibility to the world, to society, is not merely an interpersonal societal relationship, but rather it is part of our religious obligation to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well. And this no doubt is true when it comes to lifnei iver lo sitein michshol, that one is not allowed to enable a Jew to sin, one is not allowed to cause a fellow Jew to stumble. On the one hand, it seems as though it is that which is a relationship between ourselves and others, characterized as ben adam lechavero. On the other hand, it means we cannot enable him to sin, and maybe that already is a question which is ben adam lemakom. After all, if I am responsible for causing another to sin, so therefore it's as though that I have partnered with him in a particular avera, and that already is in the realm of ben adam lemakom. And there are many differences between obligations ben adam lechavero, ben adam lemakom. The Gemara tells us in the very end of Maseches Yuma, the tshuva process is different for interpersonal averos as opposed to failure to perform mitzvos. The Rambam writes in Perek Yud Aleph of Hilchos Brachos, a bracha is only recited on a mitzvah ben adam lemakom, not on that which is ben adam lechavero. The various answers the Rishonim pose, why is there no bracha on the mitzvah of tzedakah, for example? According to the Rambam, this is a host of mitzvos that you never have a bracha, only on ritual, not on kibud av va'em, not on acts of nichum aveilim, bikur cholim, and therefore perhaps this is relevant to our issue at hand. Perhaps one could suggest that really there are two different halves to lifnei iver lo sitein michshol. Because on the one hand, the Gemara tells us one cannot cause or enable a fellow Jew to stumble. And that, no doubt, seems to indicate lifnei iver in the realm of avera. And that seems to point to ben adam lemakom, our relationship with Kadosh Baruch Hu. But yet the Gemara later of Avodah Zarah and Daf Tesvav writes as follows, that one cannot go ahead and give ill advice to another individual. A person will ask you, is it appropriate to go ahead and to embark on a certain activity, to invest in a certain stock? And I know that there is a clear risk, there's a clear downside, but you know, I encourage them to go ahead and to do so. The Gemara writes that ill advice, that also is an element of lifnei iver lo sitein michshol. And perhaps one could suggest that that represent two halves of this prohibition. In the realm of mitzvos and averos, that has an element which is ben adam lamakom, in terms of simple advice and instruction that I give to others, maybe that relates to ben adam lachavero. And with this in mind, perhaps one can address the following difficulty. If you look in the Sefer HaChinuch found in Mitzvah Reish Lamed Beis, the Sefer HaChinuch echoes what the Rambam writes in Sefer HaMitzvos and Reish Sarites, and that is Shelo Lahachshil Ben Yisrael Be'etzarah. A person cannot give ill advice to a fellow Jew. And the Minchas Chinuch is quite bothered. Is Lifnei Iver really limited to Jews? Does it not extend to non-Jews as well? The very example the Gemara gives in Avodah Zarah and Avav is a twofold one. Number one, the Gemara says as follows, that there is a person who is a Nazir, and we know that he is not allowed to go ahead and to drink wine, and wine is out of his reach. And I toss him a bottle of wine, and now it is fully accessible to him. If he drinks the wine, he will violate, obviously, a Torah prohibition, and that is my prohibition of lifnei iver lo sitein michshol. And then the Gemara gives a second example, and that is eiver min hachai lenochri. A non-Jew is not allowed to partake of eiver min hachai, to rip a limb off of an animal and to consume it. And in such a case, if I am the facilitator, if I provide, I violate lifnei iver. How can the Sefer HaChinuch write shlo lahachshil ben Yisrael? Isn't it obvious in the Gemara that this prohibition is universal to Jews and to non-Jews alike? Perhaps that's exactly the answer, the two different halves to lifnei iver. There's lifnei iver in the realm of mitzvos and averos, and that, undeniably, the Gemara writes, that applies to Jew and non-Jew. It applies to feeding a fellow Jew that which is treif. It feeds to providing wine to an Ozir. It applies to providing Eiver Menachai to an non-Jew. But the later Gemara, that which is an obligation ben Adam lechavero, in interpersonal relationship, there, that's the Chiddush of the Sefer HaChinuch, that applies Shelo Lahachshil Ben Yisrael Be'etzarah. And that is exactly why it is only that element of lifnei iver that the Sefer HaChinuch makes that particular distinction. So in terms of the broad stroke, is this an interpersonal relationship or is this an obligation between ourselves and HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Perhaps lifnei iver, similar to what the Ramban writes regarding Kibud Av V'Aim, is a classic example where there are multiple tiers, where there are two halves, very different levels when it comes to lifnei iver lo sitein michshol. In fact, there is a fascinating dispute, a somewhat technical one, between the Balamor and Ramban, found in Sanhedrin Daf Ayin Dalid, and that is as follows. Lifnei iver, does that take on the characteristics of the particular avera at hand? Let's assume, for example, I encourage a person to be machal Shabbos, Rachmana Litzlan. I encourage another person to eat something which is not kosher. Both are prohibitions, but Shabbos is more stringent than the Isser of Nevela. When it comes to the broader Isser of provocation, of lifnei iver lo sitein michshol, does it really matter what the Avera is? Do I argue that provocation of that which is more stringent is considered to be a higher level, a more serious transgression? Or do I argue that no, that it's the same Isser? Provoking someone to that which is forbidden is usur, irrespective of the particular avera at hand. The Balamor writes that lifnei iver is quite specific. Lifnei iver takes on the characteristics of the avera at hand. Lifnei iver of Shabbos is more stringent than lifnei iver of a typical mitzvah saseh or mitzvah lo saseh. And the Ramban writes in that sugya, the Mochamos and Daf Yud Zayin Dape Rif in Sanhedrin, that that is not true. Lifnei Iver is the same broad prohibition, irrespective of the detail at hand, whether it is Avera A or whether in fact it is Avera B. This issue perhaps hinges on that question. See, if you assume that lifnei means that I become a partner with that individual in the performance of the Avera, one could argue that, you know, it makes perfect sense that it depends on the stringency of the Avera. To be a partner in act of Chilul Shabbos is worse than being a partner in that which pales compared to a Shabbos transgression. But if that is not the case, but rather it means similar to Eitzarah, just ill advice, it is not advisable to encourage a person to violate prohibition A or prohibition B, it is not necessarily impacted on based on the particular transgression, the Avera at hand. You know, there's a fascinating dispute between the Chazon Ish and Rav Chaim Elzer. Rav Chaim Elzer is found in Achiezer, Chilek Gimel Simen Samach Hei. The Chazon Ish is found in Yerodea, in Simen Samach Beis. Let's assume, for example, the following. I encourage a person to violate a particular Avera, and I don't succeed. I don't succeed. I place the stumbling block in front of the blind person, and he keeps on walking around it. I encourage a person to go ahead and to do something which the Torah tells us is forbidden, and somehow he doesn't listen to my ill advice. In such a case, is there an avera of lifnei velo sitein mirsho? Would one argue that the transgression is baiting, provoking the person, placing an obstacle in his path? And whether he stumbles or not really is not fully relevant to the fact that I have done something wrong, or do I argue no? Lifnei iver means that we attribute the avera to your provocation, but we begin with an avera. And one should not receive a pat on the back for encourage something to do that which is wrong, but technically speaking, if there is no avera, there is no lifnei iver. The Chazon Ish writes that lifnei iver has to begin with an avera. When an avera is transgressed, and now we question, who is held responsible? Who is at fault? To whom do we attribute that act of Avera? Then it is not only the one who performed the Avera, but even the one who facilitated the Avera as well. He is held responsible. And Reb Chaim Elzer disagrees and writes, that's not true. The provocation itself is considered to be that which is forbidden. You know, this is relevant to how you understand an incredible, meaningful, and relevant Gemara. If I were to ask you, how often is it that you encourage someone to eat something that is not kosher? How often do you give wine to a nazir? Right? Something that one does not violate in a common occurrence. But yet, when you look in the Gemara in Kedushin Daf Lamed Beis, the Gemara has an incredible application. The Gemara tells us the following story. That Rav Huna wanted to somehow determine and test the character of his son Rabba. And he took something that was valuable to his son Rabba, and v'kora shirai ba'apei, and he ripped the silk in his presence to see how he would react. Would he be deferential, or somehow would he kind of impulsively respond to that act? The Gemara said, how could Rav Huna have done such a thing? Dilma karasach, that perhaps Rabba would have become angered, and therefore, v'ka'avra lifnei iver lo sitein mirsho. And Rav Huna would have placed a stumbling block in the presence of his son. It's a fascinating Gemara on many levels. The first I would tell you is as follows. What is an example of lifnei iver? Parenting. You know, how often is it, as a parent, or for example, as a teacher, that, you know what, that we can speak inappropriately sometimes to our children? We can be very, very highly critical. We can speak in a more condescending or derisive manner to a child. And you know what? The child will in kind respond. And we'll take a step back and say, chutzpah. Now, to be able to speak to the parent, to the Rebbe in that fashion, yes. But if it was a result of our initiation, if it was a result of our tone, The Gemara writes, the child should not be excused, but the adult. Lifnei ve'lo sitein mirsho. That's what the Gemara writes regarding the case of Rav Huna. That can it be that Rav Huna really dated his son Rabba? If that was the case, that would have been a violation of lifnei ve'lo sitein mirsho. We don't always think of it in those particular terms. That, you know, we can speak in a somewhat less than deferential way, and if someone responds in kind, we can be somewhat insulted by that, but if it was a result of our initiation, of our tone, of our demeanor, therefore, lifnei ve'lo sitein mirsho. That is relevant in that particular case. How do you understand technically that line of the Gemara? This is what Rav Huna did, the Gemara suggested, ripped something in the presence of his son Rabba, and the Gemara says, how could it be? Dilma korosach? Perhaps Rabba would have become angered, maybe he would have lashed out or said something inappropriate to his father, and Rav Huna would have violated lifnei ve'lo sitein mirsho. What does dilma korosach mean? Perhaps Rabba would have become angered. Does it mean if and then? If and only if Rabba would have responded in that way, then and only then, Rav Huna would have violated lifnei ve'lo sitein mirsho. That would be true according to the Chazon Ish. And according to Rav Chaim Ozer, no. Since there is that possibility, since there was a provocation, since Dilma Karasach, perhaps, even if Rabba was absolutely silent and did nothing wrong, but merely baiting, setting up the circumstance that could provoke, that could have been the consequence, that is enough to violate lifnei ve'lo sitein mirsho. Two fascinating ways of understanding that phrase of the Gemara, Dilma Karasach, v'ka'ova lifnei ve'lo sitein mirsho. And I'll tell you the following chiddush. The Gemara writes, in Avodah Zarah Daf Vav is mentioned, that you have a nazir, and he is on the other bank of the river, and wine is out of reach. Wine is inaccessible. And I toss him the wine, I will violate lifnei ve'lo sitein mirsho. When will I violate lifnei ve'lo? According to Chazon Ish, it means if he drinks the wine, then I will violate lifnei ve'lo. I toss him the wine, and another turns to me and says, I can't drink that. I give the Eiver Menachai to the guy, and the guy says, you should know better. I'm not allowed to partake of Eiver Menachai. In such a case, the Chazon Ish writes, you would not violate lifnei ve'lo. There has to be a particular avera. Let's assume, for example, I toss him the wine, and the Nazir drinks. So in such a case, what happens? I violate this of lifnei ve'lo. And what prohibition does the Nazir violate? Perhaps one could suggest a twofold prohibition. He violates the Isser of a Nazir drinking wine. That certainly is true. But by drinking, he has caused the provider to violate lifnei ve'lo by the Nazir drinking the wine, a twofold Isser, according to Chazon Ish. Number one, shtiyas hayayin, off limits to a Nazir. Number two, by drinking, now, the provider has violifnei ver, alifnei ver of, alifnei ver. Tosus writes that that's possible as well. That chain of provocation can, in fact, continue. It means an awesome responsibility. That a person always has to be on guard, even as a chain reaction, in order to realize that sometimes the consequence of that which we do is considered to be that which is pressing. When you look in that Gemara of Avodah Zarah and Davav, the Gemara tells us this. The case is, as I depicted, that I'm on one side of the river, the Nazir is on the other side, and therefore the wine is out of reach, and it's only because I provide that he has the opportunity to go ahead and drink. This is what the Gemara calls Trei Avrei Nahara, two sides of the riverbank, meaning that without my involvement, there is no way that he would be able to violate that Isser. What happens if that is not the case? What happens if it is chad ever denahara? You know, we're all on the same side of the river. And the Nazir could access the wine in and of his own right, but I provide. What exactly is that? That's somewhat unclear from what the Gemara tells us. It would seem that the real prohibition of lifnei iver is where without my facilitating the avera, it would not occur. And what happens if that really is not true at all? If I wouldn't give it to him, he could get it elsewhere? Chad Ever Denara. So that is a fundamental dispute of the Rishonim. It's fascinating when you look in the Rambam. The Rambam never mentions that distinction at all. When the Rambam tells us the halachos l'fif neiver, you look, for example, in Sefer Mitzvos, Reish Sadites, the Rambam never writes that there's a marked difference between whether or not he could have done so on his own. And seemingly, that absence, that glaring omission, indicates that perhaps, according to the Rambam, it makes no difference. Provocation is forbidden, irrespective of whether he could have accessed it through someone else or by himself, but nonetheless, it does not give you the license to provide. If you look in the Shulchan Aruch and Mechaber and Yeredeya Kufnun Aleph, the Mechaber does not mention that distinction at all, and seemingly that is consistent with the Rambam's view that regardless of whether he is dependent on you or whether he could do so on his own, you have no license to provoke. The Ran makes the following distinction. This is the second view, and that is both are prohibited. It's forbidden even if he could have done so without your involvement, but there's a marked difference. If your participation is critical, without you he could not, that is forbidden min ha-Torah. That is the Torah restriction of lifnei iver. If, for example, he could have done so on his own, and you simply provide, you facilitate, that is what we call misayeya, lidei ovrei avera, that you are aiding in the process, and that is only forbidden, midrabanan. Both are forbidden. The Isser Torah is where your participation is vital, it's critical, it's necessary, otherwise it's only an Isser Drabanan. The third view is the view of Tosus, and that's Sugyan of Avodah Zarah, the view of the Mordechai as well, and that is the only Isser is where your participation is critical. Two sides of the river, where the Nazir cannot access wine on his own. If it's something that he could access without your involvement, then there is no prohibition at all. The spectrum, three possibilities. The Rambam, all is forbidden min HaTorah. According to Tosus, the other extreme, if your participation is critical, then yes, if not, then not. The Ran as a mid-position, both are forbidden. One is min HaTorah, one is midrabanan. The Mechaber is mentioned in Kufnun Aleph in Yeredeya, cites the view of the Rambam, and here the Ramah cites the other two views. The view of the Mordechai, that if a person could do it on his own, there is no prohibition. And then the Ramah concludes, Bal Nefesh Yachmir Al Atzmo. It's appropriate for a person to be more stringent as the view of the Ran, not to aid in any transgression, even if one could argue that he could have done so on his own. There's a fascinating comment Rabbi Kivager has. The context is somewhat technical, but nonetheless it has far-reaching implication. Rabbi Kivager is not found there in that discussion of lifnei iver. Rabbi Kivager is found later in a very different context. It's found in Yeredeya and Kuf Pei Aleph discussing this. You know, the Torah tells us, this is a sugyan makos in Daf Chav, that a man is not allowed to shave, right? Certain areas of the peyas harosh, the peyas hazakan, he cannot go ahead and shave areas of the beard with a razor. He cannot go ahead and cut areas of the sideburn even with a scissor. The isser of removal of the peyas harosh and peyas hazakan. And the Torah tells us this in the plural, lo sakifu, b'loshon rabim. And the Gemara writes in Makos and Avchav that echad hamakif, ve'echad hanikaf loke. That if one were to go ahead and do so, there are two prohibitions. The Ravid in Sefer Mitzvot writes, two separate isurim. One is the act of hakafa, to cut, to remove, and the other is to be the object of the hakafa. In isur of makif, to cut, in isur of nikaf, to have the peyas harosh or peyas hazakan removed. So, that's what the Gemara writes. If a person will go ahead and do it himself, as the Ravid points out, he is violating two different Yisurim, an Yisur of Makif and the Yisur of Nikaf. What about regarding women? Women obviously are not included in nikah. They don't have peyas arosh, peyas azakan, and therefore not included in nikah. The Gemara writes the following novelty, the chiddush, and that is, well, if you're excluded from makif, from nikah, you're excluded from makif. And therefore, a woman is not included at all in the prohibition of lo sakifu pa'as roshka. So that's what the Shulchan Aruch describes. Kuf Pei Aleph, the following. Does that really mean that a woman is allowed to shave a man inappropriately? Is that really the case? Technically, she is exempt. Certainly not, because after all, by doing so, the man will violate the Isser of Nikah. And that is providing, that is facilitating an act of Avera. Even if I myself am exempt, but to go ahead and do so, I'm causing the man to violate the Isser of Nikav, and therefore that is forbidden. Sometimes Lifnei Iver, sometimes that will be a case of Nisayeh. Good. So even though a woman is excluded, technically correct, but to be the provider, that is Lifnei Iver, Lo Sitei Mirshon. Rabbi Kvega writes the following, an interesting chiddush. I mention this even though it's somewhat technical because, as mentioned, it has far-reaching implications. What about the following case? Let's assume, for example, there is a caregiver, right? There is a nurse, a male or female, and this patient, I know, this patient is about to go ahead and take a razor, and he is going to cut. He's going to cut the peyas arosh. He's going to cut the peyas hazakan. Can the caregiver do it, right, instead of that Jewish man? Let's assume, for example, you're asked the shaila. A person says, you know, I work in the nursing home, I work in the hospital, I have to provide necessary care, and part of my job description is to go ahead and to, right, take care of the knees, including giving him a shave. And he wants to shave with that razor. If a man is asking you that question, you would say, well, certainly not. Your doing so is an isser of makif. Makif. And therefore, the fact that that is your job description does not justify the fact that you can violate that Isser of Hakafa. But here Rabbi Kvega writes a striking chiddush. Let's assume, for example, the caregiver is a woman. She is not included in Baltakif, Baltashkis, Makif, Nikav. What would the prohibition be for her to go ahead and to shave? That would only be Lifnei Iver. But by doing so, you're aiding, you're abetting. Rabbi Kvega writes, and if you didn't participate, you refuse to do it, you say, my religion does not allow me to, what would happen? What would happen? Let's say the patient would say, well, that's okay, I respect your religious right, I'll do it myself. I'll do it myself. If the patient does it himself, he's violating two Isserim. Makif and Nikav. If she will do it, the patient only violates an Isser of Nikav and not Makiv. Can you really call that Lifnei Iver? I was provoking a person to commit an Avera. My involvement, in terms of the sum game, saved him from an Avera. It did not aggravate the situation at all. And therefore, Rabbi Kvega writes, even though in that technical context, that if what you're doing is for the betterment of the individual, even though you could have construed that as facilitating, no, overall, if the bottom line is he is better off, he is violating less Isurim now than otherwise he would, that wouldn't justify a man doing so. A hakafa, that's usur. But you can't call it provocation. You can't call it Lifnei Iver. So if that caregiver would ask you, am I allowed to shave that patient where if I don't, he will? You know what the answer would be? If the man is asking you that question, you'll say that's absolutely forbidden. If a woman is asking you that question, you would say, you know, maybe there's an element of a mitzvah in doing so. Because by doing that, you're saving him from violating that issur. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach quotes this Rabbi Kvega in the Mincha Shlomo in Siman Lamed Hei. When it comes to more practical applications, you invite, for example, right, a non-religious Jew to your home. The hope is by doing so that you're going to show him the beauty of religious life, the sense of achnasas archim, a sense of gemilas chasadim. You're going to offer him some food. You're going to offer him a drink. Now, doesn't the Shulchan Aruch write that a bracha is necessary? Doesn't the Shulchan Aruch write that facilitating, providing food for one who is not going to be making a bracha, isn't that the form of Misayeli Ve'Ovevera? How can one go ahead and participate in that act? Rosh Shlomo Zalman writes, nonetheless, you have to weigh. You have to balance. What would the impact be of not inviting at all? What would the impact be of inviting, but telling this person who really does not have a sufficient background, I'm only going to allow you to partake if you go ahead and make this particular bracha? Or you will invite them, but not engage in the typical hospitality of offering them something to eat? Rosh Shlomo Zalman writes that the consequence of any of those options, he feels, is far worse than the eating without a bracha. And therefore, how can you call that lifnei iver? How can you argue that that is called a simas mirsha, reaching out and trying to be as caring and as concerned, as deferential as one possibly can, and showing basic etiquette? That is considered to be a simas mirsha. Couldn't it be that if one would act differently, that could result in a certain sense of enmity or sinna toward those who are leading a religious way of life? Rosh Shlomo Zalman writes that that is far worse than, and he compares that to the case of Rav Akiva Eger. It's an important model. And this is where you always have to ask your Rav, where you draw the line. Where exactly do you draw the line in terms of a risk-benefit? Now, inviting someone to my home. If they experience a Shabbos, perhaps their attitude will be so different. You're planting the seed through real kiruv achokim. But the possibility, the likelihood, or maybe the absolute reality that there will be chilul Shabbos in the particular process. Or, for example, the argument that, well, you know that they're going to be mechalel Shabbos in any case. Maybe I will diminish the chilul Shabbos by having them in an appropriate environment as opposed to not doing so. If that is the case, can you really argue that a diminution of chilul Shabbos, that is a case of lifnei iver? But this requires, right, a serious shelas chacham. Where, in fact, do you draw that line that we argue that the encouragement? Rosh Shlomo Zalman writes that in that context of hachnasas arachim, providing someone who is with you with the typical hospitality in order to demonstrate to them the warmth of how we feel toward a fellow Jew. But drawing the line is something that requires, right, an important shevas chacham to be posed. But in principle, it's a striking issue. Rav Akiva Eger writes that, you know, that not everything objectively is considered to be that which is a simas mirsha. In other contexts, Rosh Shlomo Zalman quotes a Mishnah that tells us in Shvi'is that let's assume, for example, a Jew comes to you and says, you know, I want to buy your animal. I want to buy, right, your cow. And the difficulty is as follows, that, you know, it's during the Shemitah year, and you're not allowed to plow a field. And if he is buying my cow or buying my plow horse in such a case, isn't that considered to be a form of lifnei iver? Beisila writes that not necessarily, because efshar l'shochta. Because after all, who says he'll use it for that purpose? He may be buying the animal, right, in order to slaughter, which is absolutely permitted during Shemitah. In other words, if that which I am doing is not necessarily considered to be a means toward that end of Avera, maybe if there are multiple options, that's what Beisila maintains in Shvi'is, that is called a Tliya. I have a right, so to speak, to hang my hat on the possibility. He will use it for A, not use it for B. And that's what Shlomo Zalman discusses as well. Again, how realistic, how serious does that Tliya have to be? You know what? To tell them to join me at a suit in my home on Shabbos morning, I know they're going to drive. What happens if I tell them, you come before Shabbos? And when they hear that, I will do everything that I can to encourage them to stay and enjoy the entirety of the Shabbos. Is that a sufficient Tliya? To be similar to at least that which Beisila says that Efshar l'shochto. In principle, that in fact is possible. right? A further area for an appropriate Shelas Chacham to ask Yerav as well, that where do you draw the line? How likely does that scenario have to be to argue that, you know, that I am no longer responsible for any type of Simas Mirshon? There's a fascinating comment that Tosus has in Menachos and Daf Lamed Zayin. You know, in broad strokes, the concept of Lifnei V'lo Sitei Mirshal emphasizes the uniqueness of Knesset Yisrael. That, you know, that we are not merely concerned and responsible for ourselves, but a profound commitment to Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh Bazeh, the institution of Arvos. And in a very literal sense, the Ritva writes that Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh Bazeh means that all of Knesset Yisrael is considered to be literally as Guf Echad, as a single body, as a single entity. That is, you know, when Yerushalmi and Nedarim and Perektes, Rabbi Akiva's Klal Godol Batorah of V'yahavta L'reyacha Kamocha. The Yerushalmi's Mashal is, for example, if a person is banging in a nail and by mistake the left hand hits the right, certainly one would not take the hammer in the other hand and club the left, club the right, certainly not. It would be painful for the body as a whole, and that is how we view each member of Knesset Yisrael. Tosfos writes in Menachos Daf Lamed Zayin, a fascinating, fascinating story. Shlomo HaMelech, the Chacham Mikol Adam, was faced with a difficult Din Torah. It was a Din Torah of Yerusha. All the siblings came, and they were debating how much should be allocated to each one. One walks in. This is what Tosfos writes. Menachos Lamed Zayin. One walks in, a Siamese twin. One body, two heads. And of course, that Siamese twin demanded Pishnayim. I'm entitled to two portions. And all the other brothers said, no, no, no. You're one individual. Guf Echad. And therefore, you're entitled to one share as we're entitled to one share. And Shlomo Melech had to make the difficult determination. How do you assess Guf Echad or Shnei Gufim? Not an easy Shaila. Right? Years ago, Rav Moshe was faced with that grueling decision where Siamese twins could not survive in that fashion. And if the doctors would separate, it would mean sacrificing one in order to prolong the life of the other. The difficult situation, Guf Echad, Shnei Gufim, how is it that one goes and assesses? Tosus writes that in that case, Shlomo Melech paskind, you might very well have two heads, but you're a single person. A single person. And the psak of Shlomo Melech was, you're only entitled to one share of Yerusha, one portion of the estate. Tosus Menachos Daf Lamed Zayin. You read the Tosus, it's fascinating. A fascinating Maisa Shehaya. But you don't really know on what basis was that decision made. You know, part of the difficulty Poskim face is you're faced with issues of real technology, and sometimes you have to be creative in sorting through all the Makoros in Chazal. Right? Tosus does not tell us how Shlomo HaMelech knew to give such a psak halacha. On the very daf in Menachos, Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph, we have in the margin, in the gloss, the Shita Mekubetzes. If you look in the Shita Mekubetzes, you don't even have to open up another sefer. It's right on the daf, Os Yud Ches. Shita Mekubetzes writes that this is how Shlomo HaMelech knew. Shlomo HaMelech did the following empirical test. He took, right, a sack, and he placed it over one head. And then he took a little bit of hot water and he poured it on the other head. And Tosfos says Shlomo Melech took a step back and saw who would react. Would the head that was covered by the sack react and scream to that small measure of pain? Shlomo Melech did so. And all of a sudden, the head that was underneath that sack yelled out in pain. Shlomo Melech paskind guf echad. That indicates it's one entity, it's one body. That was the psak of Shlomo Melech. You want to know the measure. That how is it that we determine whether Knesset Yisrael is guf echad or whether they really are Shnei Gufim, whether the harmony of all of Knesset Yisrael literally as one body, as one unit. That's what the Shittu Kvetzes writes. That is the measure. That is the measure. How is it that we react when we see another Jew is experiencing a sense of difficulty? Do we react in a more distant fashion? Or somehow are we able to experience that pain as though? That measure of Guf Echad, that Tosfos writes, is the test. That is the threshold. When the Rambam describes that a person has to associate himself with the tzibur, with the klal, a person has to celebrate together with others in their moment of joy, and a person has to feel pain in their moment of trials and tribulations and sorrow, that is the measure, the Rambam writes, of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh Bel Zeh. And the Rambam writes, if one doesn't, he sacrifices his chelek in Olam Haba. To that extent, the Rambam writes. I remember hearing from Rav Soloveitchik in terms of the Haggadah Shel Pesach that there are two different yourselves. We speak about the Ben HaRasha. Umitoch shahotzi esatzum in haklal, he's separated, he's divorced himself from the tzibur. If you look in the Mechilta writes, lafi shahotzi esatzum in haklal, the Mechilta adds one letter. Ve kafar be'ikar. The Rambam takes out that vav, and that's what we have in our Haggadah Shel Pesach. Well, lafi shahotzi esatzum in haklal, kafar be'ikar. The omission or inclusion of that vav is pretty important. If you have that vav, it means, why is he a Rasha? Because of A and B. Number one, that mahavarazos lachem, he excludes himself from the tzibur. And in addition to that, he also denies HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A and B. That's what the Rashbats discusses in his Pirish on the Haggadah Shel Pesach. The Rambam's Girsa, without that vav, it's not A and B, but it becomes a statement of causality, of cause and effect. Ulefi shahotzi esatzo min haklal, therefore, kafar be'ikar. In other words, that part of our religious obligation is not merely to see to it that we are able to observe the mitzvah Hashem personally, but rather to see ourselves as being part of that unit, as being part of the klal, and therefore, if on the glorious night of Yetzias Mitzrayim Ar Geula, a person can utilize that term of lachem, lachem v'lolo, that in and of itself, is considered to be an act of denial of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's an act of kfira. As the Rambam writes, that one who does not participate with its tzibur on that level, so eno chelek l'olam haba. One of the elements is lifnei iver. How it is that we view other Jews less fortunate than we are. How is it that we take the care and concern for others? That Gemara in Kedushin and Daf Lamed Beis, when it comes to our example of how we speak and our demeanor, how it is that we act, our example, that also is an element of lifnei iver. Because no doubt, if a person wants to significantly influence, the best way to do so is not simply by instruction, but rather by example. If one's example can be care for Knesset Yisrael, if one's example of meticulousness in mitzvos demonstrates that type of priority, that example no doubt speaks volumes. There's a fascinating comment that Chizkuni has in Parshas Baloscha, where the Chizkuni writes that, you know, throughout this entire portion of Sefer Shmos, we deal with the Klei HaMikdash and Avodas HaMishkan, Avodas HaMikdash. And we know that a Shevet was chosen, Shevet Levi, in order to go in to perform Avoda. And the Chizkuni writes in Valoscha, something we're seeing, it's a brief comment the Chizkuni has, that, you know, the initial idea of a Bechor seems to us so much more reasonable. You're talking about having a representative of the Beis HaMikdash doing Avoda. Can't every family, can't every Shevet be represented? You know, we're used to a more democratic society, have broad representation. Why is it necessary to have a shevet? What is the advantage of a shevet over Bechor? So Chizkuni writes, profound chiddush. Right? It's something you can use in almost every simcha. This is what Chizkuni comments. There's a real flaw when it comes to Bechor. Imagine the following. Imagine, right, a person has a Bechor, but you know what? The son is a Bechor, but the father is not a Bechor. The father is not a Bechor. And the son is in charge of doing avoda. So the son turns to his father and says, can you show me how to do avoda sasha? And the father has no choice but to say, you know, this is not a responsibility that I bear, this is not a mitzvah that I share, and therefore, this is not something that I can show you at all. This is something that you have to learn from the example of others. Or let's assume, for example, the opposite, that the father is in fact a Bechor, and his son is not. In such a case, the father goes off to do avodah in the mikdash, and he's forced to leave the son behind. This is a mitzvah that I have. This is not a mitzvah that you share. Hard to determine which is worse. The first scenario, the second scenario, but the tzara shoveh shebehem. Neither one is the ideal form of chinuch. Our chinuch is to teach by example. Not to teach simply by instruction, but rather that parents can model appropriate avodas Hashem. And that, the Chizkuni writes, is only true if you have a shevet system. So therefore, the father does avoda, the son does avoda, a mother is obligated in a mitzvah, the daughter is obligated in that mitzvah. So therefore, we can turn to those around us and expressly to the children and tell us that, you know, that follow that model, follow that lead. If I were to ask you, where do you see the importance of Bikur Cholim, Nichum Aveilim, Gemilus Chasodim? Is there a mitzvah in the Torah that tells us that true? You look through all the Rambam and Sefer Mitzvahs, there's no mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. There's no mitzvah of Nichum Aveidim. It's true, the Rambam writes in Perek Yudal of Hilchos Avel, all of this is included in broader strokes of V'ahavta L'reacha Kamocha. But isn't it striking that there's no mitzvah of Nichum Aveilim, no mitzvah of Bikur Cholim? How can that be? You know what the answer is? The Gemara writes in Sotan Daf Yudalet, Rab Chamer, Rabbi Chanina, Achrei Hashem Lokeichem Teleich. Kadosh Baruch Hu turns to us and says, follow my lead, follow my example. You know why you have to engage in Bikur Cholim? Kadosh Baruch Hu says, because this is what I do. When Avram Avinu was recuperating from his bris milah, Vayera Elav Avram, the Gemara of Metzian, Daf Tzaditesh, that Avram Avinu came to be Mevakir Chola, Bikur Cholim of Avram Avinu. When Avram Avinu was Nifter, Vayavarech Es Yitzchak Beno, HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to bestow a Birchas Aveilim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have taught us all of these obligations by instruction, but only did so by example. Achrei Hashem Elokeichem Teleichu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, this is what I do, and you have to follow. You have to follow my lead, Haloch Achar Midosav. We are obligated to transmit, to disseminate the Torah Hashem as HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught it to us. So on one level, instruction is paramount. But beyond that, that element of example, that is considered to be absolutely vital, absolutely critical. You want to raise children to appreciate chesed and arvus and bikur cholim and nichum aveilim. It's true, there are halachos, there are shiurim, but there is no substitute for the home that reflects and personifies these values, these midos, and to turn to others as HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns to us. Achrei Hashem Elokeichem Teleichu. So no mitzvah of those elements of chesed. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, if this is what I do, if this is what I bestow on Knesset Yisrael and on the world at large, so therefore an expectation that you will in fact do the same. One of these elements is that mitzvah of Ifnever Lo Sitenesha. Elements of Ben Adam Lamakom, elements of Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. It teaches us the primacy of the uniqueness of Knesset Yisrael, the fact that we indeed are considered to be Guf Echad, and no better way of demonstrating that point, right, rather than that example of how we relate to another, how we speak to Talmidim, to friends, how we interact with our children, as the Gemara tells us in Kedushin. That is our mandate. It's not often that we see a Nazir and we have to determine whether we will give him Yayin, but it is so often that we are in an opportunity to be the exemplar of true Avodas Hashem. Bezras Hashem, we should be Zoche to internalize that lesson of Achrei Hashem Elokeichem Teleichu, as the Rambam writes, to reach that level, to be Mekadei Shem Shamayim, not merely through the technical performance of mitzvot, but rather through the attitude, through the care, through the passion, through the demeanor of what in fact it means to be privileged member of Knesset Yisrael.